Hello, and welcome to Women Speak. My name is Danielle, and in today's episode, I speak with Jennifer Fang, the Assistant Director for the Portland Chinatown History Foundation. We discuss Portland's Chinese immigrant history and the forthcoming Chinese History Museum. The museum, which is set to open this summer 2017, is located on Northwest 3rd Avenue in downtown Portland. Visit their website, pchmf.org, to stay updated with all current events. That's pchmf.org. If you have any questions about today's episode or would like to be featured on Women Speak, please contact us on Facebook at Women Speak PDX. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Jennifer, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining me here today, especially during this week, election week. It's been pretty tense.
Yes, a terrible week.
With all of the protests and everything. So thank you for taking time out of your day, out of your healing process.
Yes, no, this is part of the healing process.
Exactly. I wanted to talk to you because you are the assistant director for Portland's Chinatown History Foundation. Mm-hmm. Which is erecting a museum that will be in Portland's Chinatown district.
Yeah.
And can you just describe to me your role with that foundation?
Yeah. I was brought on about, I would say, maybe 8 months ago. These days, there are only two employees really, like, working on this project. Everyone else is kind of, it's a big community effort, but I was brought in from the outside to do this. And so I kind of have to wear many different hats in this role, since we are so understaffed. These days, I'm mostly doing program development and also developing future exhibitions for when the museum does indeed open. I'm also doing a lot of reaching out to other local and national organizations for chances to collaborate with them on, you know, on bigger projects, but, you know, bigger projects on both a local and national level. One of the other things that I'm doing right now is I'm really actively trying to grow our archival collections and also our object collections. So
okay.
we kind of have two different bodies of collecting that we're doing. So one, we're collecting archival documents like papers and things like that, that will be used for our own research, but that we hope to, that we plan to make available to researchers in the future. And then we're also trying to grow our museum collections, so, you know, the actual collections of 3D objects.
Oh, right.
And also, I haven't been doing it as much lately, but over the summer I was working closely with local educators, like high school teachers, trying to develop curriculum related to Chinese immigration history and how local teachers can tie in the history of Chinatown here to, you know, to the national history of immigration laws.
That's very interesting. What kind of artifacts are we looking to see, as far as, can you give us any examples?
Yeah, totally. So our most recent collection our most recent acquisition, I should say, is a set of clothing. We think that it's either from the late 19th century or early 20th century, definitely before 1911. But, it's, kind of like the Chinese silk robes that were worn mm-hmm. by, we have the robes that were worn by a man and the robes that were worn by most likely this man's wife.
Oh.
And we have a man's hat that goes with the robe and also a pair of boots. I think they might be men's boots that go with a robe, but these are like official like civil servant garments.
Okay.
And they feature this patch that civil servants wore on their clothing that, you know, signified their rank and mm-hmm. Their position and what branch of the government they worked for. Mm-hmm. And so we suspect that these robes belonged to Moibak Hin, who was a prominent Chinese American in Portland's Chinatown at the mm-hmm. turn of the century. He was one of the few, like one of two Chinese millionaires, actually. Like he died a millionaire. he was extremely wealthy, but he was also appointed to be the council for the Qing dynasty government to the northwestern states. Mm-hmm. So he had a, you know, he was a government official kind of representing China in the Pacific Northwest, and he lived in Portland.
Really interesting.
Yeah. So
yeah. How do you know how he was was he contracted by Portland to?
I'm not sure. I like to live. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think mm-hmm. he was maybe. I think we can think of it as he was on an assignment.
Okay.
You know, like mm-hmm. almost like a diplomat of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Except if I'm not mistaken, he was also engaged in business matters and business ventures in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So he himself, I think, was a labor contractor mm-hmm. and brought over, you know, Chinese laborers to work in the canneries and, you know, work in the, for, you know, when they were still being built, work mm-hmm. on the railroads and such.
Mm-hmm. So how would you say those Chinese immigrants that were brought over, how do you have any evidence of how they were treated as workers while they were here?
Well, it's kind of, it depends based on the time period mm-hmm. and it depends based on the type of work that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the earliest migrants who came over, they, for the most part, you know, they were, many of them were searching for gold. It was during the gold rush. And then when they realized that there actually wasn't that much gold to be found, then that's when they started turning to railroad work. And the railroad work initially, you know, it was fine. Like there were Chinese workers, there were Irish workers, there were black workers,
mm-hmm.
All, you know, working on this massive project. But as soon as railroad work started to dry out in the West, that's when, you know, as soon as like all these different laborers started having to actually compete for these jobs, that's when the anti-Chinese sentiment really started to grow. Mm. And this is when we start to see the development of this idea that these jobs, these railroad jobs belong to American workers. And of course, by American workers, they mean white workers.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that meant that those workers were, you know, originally from Ireland or originally from Germany.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this is when we begin to see that the real demonization of Chinese laborers
mm-hmm.
And of, you know, kind of the byproduct of that is particularly harmful stereotypes of Chinese men and mm-hmm. Chinese masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this anti-Chinese sentiment eventually, you know, it's harnessed by the labor groups.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're able to organize white laborers around this. And, you know, this eventually, these people are able to eventually force Chinese laborers out of these railroad encampments, and this eventually pushes Chinese people into urban areas. Like, this is how we get the formation of Chinatowns. It's actually okay. from anti-Chinese violence and anti-Chinese sentiment that's growing in these more, you know, kind of rural mm-hmm. Railroad and logging encampments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's very interesting because I feel like, you know, Portland's Chinatown originated downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But now it almost seems like it's more out towards, like, Southeast 82nd,
yeah, totally.
Where they're calling it the Jade District mm-hmm. now. And, you know, were they pushed out of their original Chinatown because of that sentiment, you know, that sentimentality
yeah.
that was still existing, would you say?
Yeah. So there are actually, like, in downtown Portland, mm-hmm. so on the west side, there are actually two Chinatowns.
Okay.
The very first Chinatown existed south of Burnside. So mm-hmm. it was, like, 2nd Avenue and Front Avenue from maybe from Burnside all the way down to Salmon.
Okay.
Actually, so it went really far south.
Mm-hmm.
We see Chinese businesses set up, you know, alongside white businesses in mm-hmm. those areas. And those, like, that original Chinatown, that was there since Portland's incorporation. Like, mm-hmm. that, you know, Chinese people have been in Portland since Portland was incorporated
right.
as a city. But they got pushed out in 1905, I believe, after the Lewis and Clark Centennial Exhibition, which prompted a giant boom of migration into the city. And so as outsiders came into the city and they wanted to increasingly settle in Chinatown because that was, mm-hmm. you know, central downtown mm-hmm. Portland, this pushed Chinese people who were living there originally to move across Burnside to Northwest, like, you know, to kind of where we mm-hmm. think of Chinatown now, mm-hmm. where the gate is.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chinese people lived in that newer Chinatown maybe from, you know, the turn of the 20th century
mm-hmm.
up until, I would say, the 1960s, mm-hmm. 70s in large numbers.
Okay.
And then eventually in the mid 20th century, as, like, housing mm-hmm. as housing policies became less restrictive, as Chinese people were able to kind of buy homes mm-hmm. and move to other places mm-hmm. in the city, that's when we see the migration mm-hmm. out of Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we see in the Jade District now, and I mean, I know a lot more about the older mm-hmm. Chinatowns than I do about the Jade mm-hmm. District, but my understanding of the Jade District is that this is an area where we have a lot of newer immigrants, like, mm-hmm. You know, first generation mm-hmm. immigrants from Asia. And so in that sense, yeah, it is like a newer, you mm-hmm. know, it is like a new Chinatown. We see these types of neighborhoods developing, you know, in cities across the country. But the thing that was really interesting about these older Chinatowns, these historic Chinatowns on the west side of the river, is that these were places, especially when we start looking at, like, Chinese Americans in, you know, in the early to mid 20th century, these are places where, like, Chinese Americans, like, who were born in America were living. And they were living there because they couldn't live anywhere else. So those historic Chinatowns are really the product of, especially the Chinatown in Northwest, like, that is the product of racism, and that's the product mm-hmm. of racist housing policies,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, just overall this idea that, you know, like, we need to keep these marginalized peoples in one area mm-hmm. of the city.
Mm-hmm. Now, how would you say that the museum that's being built, you know, why would you say that's important for the community, specifically for Chinese Americans?
Right. I think the museum is important because it tries to assert and insert the history of Chinese people into the broader history of Portland and into the broader history of the Pacific Northwest. You know, I mean, people know that there's a Chinatown here, but then they don't ever like stop to, you know, I think people are oftentimes surprised when, you know, when we say that, no, actually Chinese people have like been here since the 1850s, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, on the main block of Portland, when it was incorporated as a city, there was a Chinese laundry right there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, I think people forget that, or people just don't know it, or they don't, mm-hmm. you know, they don't think that that's part of mm-hmm. the history of Portland. And so I think in some ways, you know, we're trying to really like actively put this immigrant group into this broader history. Mm-hmm. And I think that in doing so, we are also validating the experiences of Chinese Americans in this city. And we're validating their experiences as Portland experiences mm-hmm. and as American experiences mm-hmm. and immigrant experiences rather than as just Chinese experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a real desire here to just try to integrate that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very important. Yeah. Especially, it's very relevant right now to what's going on with the elections.
It's
and
so true. Yeah, like I feel like, the election is really like, just on a personal level, is really like galvanized me. I'm like, no, you just gotta fight back harder.
Just gotta keep going and be our true selves.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And stick together, unite. And,
yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I recently, pre-election, I saw a video that was posted by the New York Times that was in response to an open letter, that their editor had written. And he had an experience where a lady had told him to, you know, go back to China, in quotes. And, you know, Asian Americans throughout the nation responded by sharing their own racist moments and hashtagged, you know, this is 2016. And the video that I saw was a compilation of those moments. It was really impactful to watch. And, you know, I think that, you know, as a white woman in Portland, in our liberal bubble, sometimes it's hard to, you know, you get lost and you don't remember that all of that racism is still, you know, happening sometimes, you know. Can you speak on the history of Portland's attitudes toward Chinese Americans?
Yeah. You know.
Or what you've heard from, you know, elders in the community about that?
Yeah. So Portland, you know, at the turn of the century, at the turn of the 20th century, Portland had the second largest Chinatown in the country. And the reason why is not because Chinese people, like, just really wanted to live in Portland. The reason why was because they're all up and down the West Coast, throughout the West, like, you know, in the coastal areas and in the interior areas, there was anti-Chinese violence going on everywhere. Like, much of this was related to these labor struggles. So this violence drove Chinese people to essentially seek refuge in Portland because Portland, of all the major West Coast cities, had the most tolerant policies and tolerant attitudes towards Chinese people. This is not to say that Portlanders were like welcoming of Chinese or they were, you know, they also certainly weren't like not anti-Chinese or not racist, but you know, when you compare like Harvey Scott of the Oregonian saying that the city needs Chinese people because they're an asset to the economy, that they will help to build Portland into a bigger and more thriving city. When you have attitudes like that coming from like city leaders compared to what was happening in Tacoma and in Seattle, where the mayors of those cities were actively organizing whites to drive Chinese people out of town, you know, that makes Portland seem a lot more appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's like way, way old
mm-hmm.
history.
Mm-hmm.
Portland obviously does not have the second largest Chinatown anymore. But the, you know, the elders that my organization works with, these people who, you know, are like fourth, fifth generation Americans, some of whom are actually like fourth generation Portlanders.
Mm-hmm.
They're reluctant to speak about these experiences of racism, at least like face to face types of like go back to China type of racism.
Mm-hmm.
But what they actually do talk about a lot is their experiences with institutional racism or systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the biggest examples of this is the fact that, like, among the elders that I speak to, one woman in particular, her name is Bertha Seigert. She's almost 90. She grew up in Portland's Chinatown. Her family was from, you know, I think she's at least second generation. But she went to Oregon State. She graduated from Oregon State University, I think in the 50s, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
with a degree in home economics, because that was a degree mm-hmm. at the
mm-hmm.
time. But anyway, you know, she got this degree in home economics. She was qualified to become a teacher. She was actually the first, I think she was the first Asian American, or at least Chinese American woman, to receive this teaching credential in the entire state of Oregon. But she couldn't get a job in Oregon because no school would hire a Chinese teacher. And so she ended up having to get a job. She ended up getting a job somewhere like in Washington State, in the Gorge area, but it was like pretty far out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it was extremely rural. She said that, you know, there were like 40 students in the entire school where she taught. But, you know, it's stories like that where you see this generation of people who are the first to, you know, to get college educations, they're the first to become professionally trained, and they can't find gainful employment because no employer wants to hire a Chinese person to do this like white collar job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we see a lot of among this community. And, you know, again, just like going back to that point about how Chinatown in the mid 20th century was home to a place, it was home to a population of American born Chinese. So these people are like pretty assimilated.
Mm-hmm.
They speak English fluently. They are, you know, on paper Americans.
Mm-hmm.
This reveals kind of a general, a hostile climate. You know what I mean? The fact that these people are limited to living in this one area. And this, you know, illuminates just exactly what was going on in terms of, you know, racist or discriminatory housing
mm-hmm.
policies or like agreements, you know, neighborhood covenants that neighbors would, you know, kind of adhere to not sell homes to non-white people, or, you know, actively prevent non-white people from moving into their neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that's telling of Portland's history. It's definitely not, you know, we're not seeing like lynch mobs, but we are seeing this much more subtle form of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of interesting about Chinatown, though, in this climate of, you know, dealing with this discrimination, dealing with this type of hostility, is that despite people's marginalization from white Portland, in Chinatown, we see a great deal of ethnic mingling. So Chinatown, even though it's kind of colloquially known as Chinatown, mm-hmm. it was actually a pretty multi-ethnic neighborhood. So, mm-hmm. You know, like along Northwest 4th Avenue, that was where the Chinese tended to live. But then along Northwest 2nd Avenue and, you know, and Front Avenue, that's where the Japanese American community lived. On 3rd Avenue, we see kind of a mixing of, you know, of these different groups. And, you know, just when I've been doing the research of the block where our museum is going to be, we're at 3rd and Davis.
Okay.
So the block of 3rd Avenue between Davis and Cooch, there was like, you know, it was super multi-ethnic. There was, you know, there was a Greek wholesale there. Mm-hmm. There was a Scandinavian business there. There was an African-American shoe shine there. There was a Japanese-American electrics wholesale company. Yeah. And there was a Chinese laundry. So it's like, you know, you see this mixing of people or this, you know, this interaction mm-hmm. of people. And, you know, it's just interesting to note that, like, Portland's, this area of Portland is historically, you know, it's an immigrant neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's an immigrant neighborhood, or it's a neighborhood where, you know, people who are marginalized in one way or another have always kind of lived, mm-hmm. and have, you know, this was kind of their space.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. So, when is the museum actually scheduled to open?
The museum is scheduled to open during the summer of 2017. It's coming up really
soon. Very
soon.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Like, we, you know, the space that we have right now as it stands is pretty raw.
Mm-hmm.
So we are entering the construction and, or the design and construction phase right now. Mm-hmm. We just signed contract with the architects, so
yeah,
it's the pieces are moving.
It's coming.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me, Jennifer. There you have it. There's Jennifer Fang, the assistant director for the Portland Chinatown History Foundation, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Thank you.